Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastomavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare
Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So page 49 When the residents of Vidarbhapura heard that Lord Krishna had come, they all went to see him. With cupped palms of their eyes, they drank the honey of his lotus face. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, The people drank the incomparable sweetness of Krishna's lotus face. This indicates the quantity of sweetness of his face. It was wonderful because of the number of people drinking and the unlimited supply of sweetness of one face. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that the next three verses describe the excellent suitability of Krishna and Rukmini as seen by the people. The people of the city said, Rukmini and no one else deserves to become his wife, and he also, possessing such flawless beauty, is the only suitable husband for Princess Vaishmi. Vaishmi. Never heard that one. Yes, yes, Bhishma. But I'm saying I don't think anybody has a name like that. No? Never heard of Bhishma. Srila Jiva Goswami's technical aspect on the combination of statements. Krishna alone and no one else is suitable to be her husband, and no one else except Rukmini is suitable as his wife. He alone and no other is most suitable as a husband for Rukmini alone, and no one else, and no one else. There is not even a little unsuitability in others. This is a different way of asserting the same fact. To derive another meaning from one statement is considered to be a fault, since an imaginary meaning is not respected. One will not be able to attain the true meaning if a statement has various interpretations. It is said, Shabda buddhi karmanam viramya vyapara bhavaha. When the function of words has been understood in a sequence, the use is finished. A statement should be made only once. This is quoted in Sahitya Darpana, Commentary 123. However, the conclusion is stated in Sridhar Swami's commentary. Anudya vibhedya bhedena vibhinanam eva vakyanam saha prayogat. Various statements can be used to express the same meaning in different words. Generally, one should not repeat a statement. However, one can do so eloquently by using different words. So in other words, one statement you won't interpret in many ways, but you can use many different approaches to explain one thing. Does that make sense? So that's vichar. Vichar is approaching the same thing from different angles. Because if you're giving a conclusion, the conclusion's done. Does that make sense? So this is just the opposite of the modern academy, where whatever you have, the more statements you can get out of it, the more fun they have. Because then it means there's even less of a conclusion. So you can go off in so many directions and, you know, take anything, any way and have some fun. But the Vedic is, no, the one thing has one meaning. Then you can look at it from different angles using different words, different examples, different approaches, you know, approaching from a different aspect. Does that make sense? You can look at it astrologically, you can look at it grammatically, you can look at it as far as ritual goes, you can look at it according to Ayurveda. So all these different ways you can look at it. So, yes? No?
So all those ways should come to the same conclusion.
They should come to the same conclusion, just using different words. So his point is, since you can only state it once, you can't, but the point is since there may be more things you want to say, then you have to say with different words to show that same conclusion, because you can't give two conclusions. Otherwise, people would become confused. Yeah. So this is Jiva Goswami then quoting from Sahitya Darpan on the first point, and then the second point he's bringing out from Sridhar Swami's commentary about how there's only one statement for the thing, and then there is vichar, how you can look at it from different angles. Yes.
So the words that have been used in the statement basically try to confirm that either Krishna or either Rukmini are supposed to be the husband and wife and no one else like him.
Yes, no, they're establishing that point. So you're saying only they're suitable and no one else is suitable.
Mm-hmm.
Right, does that make sense? So that's the point. And also they're unsuitable for anyone else, seeing that no one else is suitable enough.
It's been emphasized so that there is no room for doubt.
Yes. So it's just bringing out that point. So now you can't interpret this in another way. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. These are the seven statements with the negative qualifier, no one else or nothing else, applied to each statement as follows. For him alone and no other. As a wife, not as an enjoyable object. Rukmini alone and no one else. This certainly must be and should not be avoided. He alone and no one else. For Rukmini and no one else. This must be done without the slightest trace of doubt. Because of the number of speakers, there are numerous statements. Seven statements have been combined in one. Some said Rukmini should be his wife and no one else's. Right? So it means Rukmini should only be married to him, not to anybody else. Others said she should be his wife and nothing else, such as an object of enjoyment. So in other words, she should just be his wife. It shouldn't be that they have a relationship, but they don't get married. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just, that's the point that should be done. In this way, also, four other statements could be made. Rukmini should certainly be his wife. There is no question about it. Krishna and only Krishna should be Rukmini's husband. Right? So saying she should just be his wife, he should be her husband. Right? So from these different angles. Krishna should be the husband of Rukmini only. Means no one else should be her husband. Right? Not that means he should only be the husband of her and no one else. That's not the statement. Because they're Kshatriyas, so that might be. But the point is Rukmini should be there. And in any case, if Krishna marries her, she's the first marriage. Therefore, according to the Dharma Shastra, the first wife is the main wife. So even if the Kshatriya has more than one wife, still, when it comes to official things and all that, that wife is the main. It always has to work like that. It's just that when you're dealing in the feminine nature, there has to be a pecking order. Like that. It means for the men, there's a pecking order according to getting things done. But you don't need one specifically socially. Right? If you're just hanging out, you don't need a pecking order. If you're trying to accomplish something, then you need a pecking order. Simply because it's efficient. But in the feminine world, then you have to have a pecking order. You know, it's just starting, nothing's getting done, that doesn't matter. There has to be a pecking order. Right? Who's who and, you know, like that. It's just the way it works. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then, Rukmini would be the primary wife. All the others, then, would be secondary in that, but they would be within the main eight. So there can be eight main wives. And then beyond that, then there's something else. So he sees that, what's the name? The 16,108 are referred to from the aspect of Rohini. Right? So Rohini and all the others. Does that make sense? Because they're beyond that eight. So they're in another category. Does that make sense? Yeah. So everyone's taken care of very nicely, that goes. But as far as official things and prominent things, then it will only be within those eight. And of those, it'll be one. So if it's a general thing, they all sit together like that, and then after that, the others. But if it's going to be like a yagya, where then the husband has to be doing the yagya with his wife, it will be Rukmini, not someone else. Does that make sense? If the queen is doing a yagya in her own house, then she'll be the one sitting there. But if you're having something official like that in Dwarka, or doing something, you do some big yagya, like Yudhishthir is doing the Rajasuya sacrifice, then it has to be Draupadi. Right? It won't be anyone else. And it won't be that she'll be hanging out with one of the other brothers. No, because he's doing the yagya, then she's with him. Does this make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Senior wife in any way becomes involved in the marriages with the junior wives?
Does the elder wife become involved in marriage with the junior wife?
Participate.
How do you mean participate?
When the second marriage is taking place, what does the first wife do? Sit. Sit for the marriage or not?
Yes, sir? Point is, she's just confirming that you wouldn't do that. Just to make sure everybody should understand. Because technically they're all co-wives, but at the same time they're all rivals. You know, so that way then they wouldn't necessarily take part in anyone else's. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Krishna has to be very clever in doing this. Like you don't see it generally in any problem. You don't see anything come up in any place. Like when we're talking with Draupadi, then they're all sitting together and everything because they have the common husband. So there's not a problem. There's that same focus. So as long as the focus is on Krishna, it all works. But if it's on the focus of their specific relationship with Krishna, that's when everything's separate. That's why each has their own palace, as own everything. So it's not that they have to. They don't have to share pots or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Most of the idea is, okay, you have many wives, and it's just more ladies move into the house. No, each wife has her own house. That's the way it is. And the smarter you are, they're not so connected. There's one palace, I don't remember where it is.
You said Fiji.
Sorry?
You said one Fiji.
Before he was at GBC, he had two wives. So Vasudev, yes. So how they were set up, I don't know. But I knew of another devotee in Mauritius who had two wives. And he had two houses. You know, not small houses, three-story, full-on houses, you know, lawn in front, back, you know, the whole thing. So, thanks, that makes sense? Or is that too archaic? Like that. We used to have front yards, backyards, side yards, you know, we had the whole thing like that. So, in other words, there's more than 3 feet on between the edge of your house and the land around it, like that, yeah. So, a big house like that, and then his comparable house, not next to it, but the one after that. Because if they're right next to each other, then they'll always be complaining that the other one's looking in their windows and spying on them and this and that. So there's one house in between. Right? Like that. But for the children, they move between the two houses, because for them it's the same thing. So the kids will be in one house, they eat there, they go in the other house, it doesn't matter. But the two wives won't be in the same house. So if they're going out to something, generally you'll go with one or go with the other. So depending upon what's happening, then that's there. So it's just a matter of working that out. But at the same time, it's not that they can't function together. Because then Manu mentions that the king, when he goes in after, you know, the day in the court, he goes into the inner chamber, then there's a general kind of area there. You know, that all of them can use. Then there's their specific own area. And so he meets all the queens there in that general area. So they're all there. Because, because otherwise each one will think, you know, why she'll be there. Right? So they all need to be there. But he has to be able to say something unique about each one that will be appreciated by the queen herself and by the others. Right? And this is a daily activity, and you can't repeat it.
So much trouble.
Sorry?
So much trouble.
Yes. That's the point. So unless, that's why the kings, there's so much passion and, you know, and goodness. No ignorance, because if there's any ignorance, they couldn't do this. So there has to be enough passion that they're willing to put in, you know, you multiply, you know, 360 times whatever it is, 30 years. That's a lot of days, you know. It's basically 10,000 days. So you have to come up with 10,000 different... You can have some slight subtlety, but there has to be a difference. It can't be exactly the same. As pointed out here, various statements can be used to express the same meaning in different words. So that you can do. And it can't be the same. And so each one of them has to... Then after that, then he'll go to his quarters, they'll go to their quarters, like that. And depending upon how it's arranged, one king had it that he had roof entrances... to all of the apartments of the queens. Because you have the front door where the common hallway and different that is. But then he had roof entrances so that he could go up there and none of the other queens actually knew where he was. So whoever he was with, the other ones wouldn't know. So he could be in his room, he could be in court, he could be, you know, like this. So, in other words, if you don't know, it's good. If you know, that's a problem. Right? So in other words, that's why then, according to how you say, Shastra recommends one sticks to one wife because that will be spiritual. Because the other is you're not adding anything more spiritual, you're just adding more effort. Does that make sense? So individuals may be able to do that. But it's not a general policy. It's not a general principle. So, now you understand the question? Okay. Okay, Krishna should be the husband of Rukmini only. Not another. So Krishna must be the husband of Rukmini. So in other words, he must be the other. But then from the negative is no one else should be. Only he should be. So all these different residents, then they're approaching it from different angles. The same thing, you know, as being stated in the previous statement. It's all one statement, but it just has different words, different angles. But Sukadeva Goswami's combined them all together. But the acharyas then are bringing out how there's the different statements like that. So we've seen that before. He's combined stories because of the similar aspect. And so then they naturally flow. So we can do that. And for the general audience, it's fine when it's complete. But we can see the acharyas can see the subtleties there and appreciate that. And so then they are very kindly revealed that to us. To say it is a fault because of the impossibility of combining seven statements in one is not correct, as there are authoritative statements such which mention that it is possible to combine different statements in one. Right? So if you can bring them all together, then it just means the qualification of the person. So we can see that Sukadeva Goswami is very qualified. You know, speaking 18, all 18 Puranas, you know, gives you some good practice.
Can you say that Vedanta Sutra is an example of the application of this kind of a statement that it is being used, that it has been just like being very specific?
Meaning, you use one conclusion, you're just bringing out the different angles. Because everything is just doing that. Because why is this the point? Because the conclusion is always Krishna. But you can bring out different aspects of that, different angles of discussing Krishna. But there is only Krishna as a discussion, technically. There's no other conclusion. It's not that it's Krishna and something else. No, there's only Krishna. Does that make sense? So what angle you want to take on that, then you can have different. So then that's Ekayana. It's only about Vishnu. Right? So everything just that reminds you of the Lord. Right? And you can see it's of those who can do that. Then we see the residents of Braja do this the best, and of those, then the gopis. Does that make sense? So because of that focus and that ability, that everything's connected, seeing everything connected to Krishna, then we see is that it's just simple. Everything's connected to Krishna and they act in that way. But we do see is if they're going to apply that philosophically, then they can give the most detailed definitions and instructions on all these topics of how it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? But the point is they're not scholars. Right? It's just this is how they see. So what they see is beyond the scope of any scholar. And if they decide to get involved in scholarship, like Jiva Goswami, then they're the best scholar. You know? We were discussing this morning. He says, basically, there is no other scholar like this. Like that. So it's not just, in the Gaudiyas, then he's the man, or in the last few hundred years, he's the man. No, he is the man. That's it. There isn't anyone as scholarly as Jiva Goswami. That's just the way it works. Does that make sense? Like that. The people of the city concluded, may Achyuta, the creator of the three worlds, be satisfied with whatever pious work we may have done and show his mercy by taking the hand of Vaidarbhi. Footnote 24. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, it appears that Rukmini was a very popular princess, and all the citizens, out of intense love for her, prayed for her best fortune. Because you're definitely going to get better fortune connected to Krishna than to Shishupal. Right? That's the... Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Oh, no. Srila Sugadeva Goswami continued, bound by their swelling love, the city's residents spoke in this way. Then the bride, protected by guards, left the inner palace to visit the temple of Ambika. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, deity worship in the temple has been in existence since the beginning of Vedic culture. So it's always been there. It's just whether it's the process for the age or not, but it's always been there. Right? Because I think it was Indradumna, right? Was establishing the Jagannath temple. That was Satyayuga. You know? And then a little bit of time elapsed, and then I'm not sure when it was, but it was quite some time later. It may have been the same yuga also, but it was just later. So deity worship's always been there, but whether it's the process or not, just like our process is chanting the holy name, but deity worship is there. Does that make sense? So in Dwapara Yuga, then that is the Yuga Dharma. And then in the other ages, then they have meditation, but it's not that they don't have deities. Right? Just like, what's the... Payavrata? Aditi? No, Aditi. Aditi. Aditi, then she was worshipping a deity of Krishna. Right? So you always have the deity worships always there.
Beginning of the Ahobila Narasimha Stotra, it says that Ram went to Ahobila Narasimha and offered obeisances to the Narasimha deity.
Oh, okay. Yes. He also then worshipped Lord Shiva in Rameshwaram. And he also carved the deity of
Valukeshwar.
Bombay.
let's say. Is it Gopinath? Kirchor Gopinath?
Yeah. No, I think it's Tota Gopinath. Isn't it Tota Gopinath?
It's Kirchor.
Oh, Kirchor.
Kirchor.
Kirchor is the leaf. He's a little more rough. Yeah, okay. So Kirchor Garfield. Arisa. Sorry. It may be another deity also. And also he had the deity of Rangaji. He used to carry him in his palm. So that's how big they were then. So. Like that. Because Rangaji is, I think, like 12 feet, isn't it? He's smaller than Trivandrum, right?
Yes.
Because Trivandrum, you need three doors to see it. Mm-hmm. Like that.
He's smaller than both Adikeshan and Anantapadmanabha.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes. But he used to fit in his hand like this, you know. And so then he gave him to Vibhishana, who then was carrying, and then he, somehow or another put him down. And then, you know, by the trick, no, he didn't put him down, he gave him to Ganesh, and Ganesh then put him down. Okay. That he was going, because the idea was, is that he gave him the deity, you know, so he could, because he wanted to be with Lord Ramachandra, but he needed to, manage
Lanka.
So then he gave him this deity so that he could worship. But the rule was you can take him to wherever you want, but as long as you don't put him down, as soon as you put him down, he'll stay there. So then he was walking, and he got to wherever it is that down in the cavity there, and he had to go to the bathroom, you know, because he's walking from Ayodhya. You know, so then he didn't know what to do because he can't put him down. But then he saw this Brahmin boy, right? So Ganesh had come disguised as a Brahmin boy, you know, just for this purpose. Somehow, no, there are a lot of things. Even the cavity was this, yeah. Right? The cavity is. Agastya had the Ganga water in his loda, and then Indra, as a form of a crow, came and landed on it and knocked it over. So there seems to be a lot happening at that spot. Right? So then he handed him in, told him, don't put it down. So he went to go to the bathroom. I think it just maybe took some time. So then the deity started getting heavier and heavier. And so he had to put him down. So it appears that it was, you know, all the arrangement of the Lord. And so then he wanted to stay there. But so when he came back, then he was already on the ground, so he couldn't pick him up. But he was facing Lanka like that. So then he's giving his blessings there. But then from that, I think Vibhishan gave Ganesh a whack. And so if you look, there's a dent in his head like that. That's part of the, you know, Ganesh has a dent in his head. That's from that pastime with Vibhishana.
And once in 12 years, Vibhishan, he walks through the ocean and
comes to take darshan. Okay. So is there a specific day or something for that? Or?
I have no idea.
Okay. I'm just wondering to just leave the temple closed or, you know, it's his darshan or... There's a class of men describing the Bhagavad Gita as Veda Vada Rata. They believe only in the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, but not in temple worship. Right? Because from the ceremonies, then you're going to get all your karmakanda benefits. Because technically from worshiping Vishnu, that's not where you get your karmakanda benefits. Like that. So they only believe in that. So that they only follow the Shruti. They won't follow Smriti. So they'll consider Pancharatra Smriti. Such foolish people may here take note that although this marriage of Krishna and Rukmini took place more than 5,000 years ago, there are arrangements for temple worship, because otherwise they say it's a new thing. It's not that it's always been there. But the point is the Vedas, all these four aspects of meditation, yajna, worship of the deity, and Harinam Sankirtan, these are always there in all the four ages. It's just which one is the prominent one at the time. But all of them have to have the other aspects, right? To meditate, you have to meditate on the deity. You have to chant the holy name. Does that make sense? So you can't not do these other aspects. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, Bhagavad Gita 9:25. The worshippers of the demigods attain the abodes of the demigods. There are many people who worship the demigods and many who directly worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The system of demigod worship was directly The system of demigod worship was directed mainly to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Ganesh, the Sun God, and Goddess Durga. Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga were worshipped even by the royal families. Other minor demigods were worshipped by silly, lower-class people. As far as the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are concerned, they simply worship Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this worship of Shiva and Durga, that's generally we see the Kshatriyas may be doing that, but they're worshipping Vishnu. It's just for the prosperity of the kingdom and all those kind of aspects like that. Since they're dealing in this kind of way, then it matches the mood. But Brahmanas, since they're focused just on worshiping the Lord, they don't have to get into any of the demigod worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, the worship of demigods is condemned but not forbidden. There it is clearly stated that less intelligent men worship the demigods for material benefit. Right, so if you're worshiping to please the Supreme Lord, like you see is that Rukmini is worshiping, or the gopis in Vrindavan worshiping Katyayani, then that's not a problem. But if you're worshiping for something material, then that's a problem. As Rukmini proceeded towards the temple of goddess Durga, within her heart she always thought of the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, when Rukmini went to the temple, it was not with the intention of an ordinary person who goes to beg for material benefits. Her only goal was Krishna. So she's going to go take her blessings to get Krishna as her husband. That's the idea. So it's different. It's devotional service. Yeah? But we see as a general rule, we don't get involved in the demigods. Right? So, because there's no need for us. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, the residents spoke among themselves continually in this manner. They were not afraid of Rukmi, because they were bound by effects of prema. Kala means producing, or they were bound by a particle, kala, of prema, which was pleasing to them. That prema was suitable for friendly emotions to the Lord and was exalted. What then to speak of Rukmini and other women? The word cha indicates that Rukmini was aware of what the people spoke. Just as they had prema for her, she experienced prema for them. She also took their speech as an auspicious sign and therefore in joy entered the Durga temple. So it's like all these things are known, but it just adds to that aspect of Krishna consciousness. That's the point, is that knowledge and all these other things, they're just to support. It doesn't have another purpose. Yes.
So in terms of politics, we see that Bhishmaka, he has his own opinion, and then Rukmi, he's got his own, and then the public opinion is there. So when is it, at what point or how it is considered the public opinion, what public thinks about what's going on in the kingdom?
Means what effect does it have?
Yeah,
it's one of the things to consider. Means when the king is contemplating things, he has to see that one, the Brahmins are satisfied, the senior persons of the kingdom are satisfied. Means that, you know, the ministers and all them, and the public. Because the whole idea is you're protecting the public, so by knowing their opinion, you know how they're doing. Does that make sense? So, but that's not judged by just what's, not that the opinion itself is the important aspect. It's the quality of the opinion. And so therefore that shows how well the kingdom is going in the way of Krishna consciousness and in the way of prosperity. So if what they're saying is not Krishna conscious, then you have to do something to improve Krishna consciousness. If they're suffering due to, you know, things aren't going well materially, then that has to be addressed by the king. But it's not that their word establishes what's to be done. In other words, it's considered and then worked into the plan, but they won't know how to run a kingdom. So the king has to take those things and apply it. It's not that what they say is how it goes. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So the modern is it's this or it's that. No, it always is a combination. So the proper administration then is considering what is beneficial for the public according to Shastra and according to what their experience and, you know, practical experience is. So that combination makes it work. Because otherwise, if you go by what they want, they don't know what they want. Because if they knew what they want, then they would have worked it out. Because some say you need more money. People have more money. They want this. They want that. So that's the point, is the common person actually doesn't know what he wants. So the Shastra says what actually is of value and what will give the best benefits. And then people try to bring their life in line with that, and the king is saying that the facilities for doing that is there. The education is there, the proper association, the structure is there, the protection is there so they can follow that. So all that is then considered. But the public opinion is represented, but it's not that it has authority. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami comments to verse 37. Oh, through 39. Okay, I was trying to think. 37, 3 through 9? Or okay. In the Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 3:52. In discussing sympathetic love, Anu Modanat Maka, an example with a trace of Kanta Bhava is shown in order to understand it. People with various moods developed in their hearts sympathy for Kanta Bhava with a portion of Samanya love for Krishna characterized as the husband, since they were not qualified for contact with the full sarup of Kanta Bhava, filled with various pastimes. Thus they are described as Prema Kala Badha, having a small portion, kala, of Kanta Bhava. They were favorable to the happiness by being sympathetic to her. By that trace of Kanta Bhava, various citizens with various contrary bhavas developed joy in their hearts, surpassing all bhavas. Everyone developed oneness of bhava simultaneously. When the moon of bhava rises by itself, there is extreme joy in the hearts of all. Because they were talking about Krishna, it was all about Rukmini and Krishna, then that brought up the thing that they all were therefore absorbed in the same way. Though they started from seven different angles, they all ended up in the same point.
What's Kanta Bhava? That I love Krishna.
That kind of Krishna.
Huh?
That kind of Krishna.
No, I love Krishna is Kanta Bhava. That is what.
I love Krishna. Oh, okay. What does Kanta mean?
I beloved.
Huh?
Beloved.
Beloved.
Wife.
Oh, like Radha Kanta. Okay. Like you have the what, Radha Kanta? Yeah, that means the beloved of. So Kanta means the beloved. So there's an aspect of Kanta Bhava, they have that affection for Krishna. But it's only a kala, a portion. So it's not that full. They don't have the qualification for that full form, like Rukmini does. But they have an affection for, and so then they can appreciate that this will be a perfect match. And so it's based on affection. So. Yeah. So, because it's about Krishna, then everybody's happy. Everyone's satisfied. Verses 40 to 57. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. Yeah. I just think we could, you know, dig a very huge pit and put some doors over it, and as they go by, then you can just have the little button, and as they go, you just push the button and they all disappear. No, but then they'll worry about it, go around it this way then. Yeah, it means like this guy, he's making no noise, he can go by. But when they honk, then...
You should put a signboard, no honk.
Srila Jiva Goswami points out that the following four verses, 40 to 43, describe Rukmini's visit to the temple of Goddess Durga. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Rukmini shyly went out on foot to see the lotus feet of the deity Bhavani. accompanied by her mothers and girlfriends, and protected by the king's valiant soldiers. Who held their upraised weapons at the ready. She simply absorbed her mind in the lotus feet of Krishna. Right? So the girl's going out, she can go. So whatever, just that there are those there to make sure that nothing happens. Right? You know, generally you're going to leave the girl alone when she's surrounded by people who with weapons that are drawn and ready to use. It's not that they are just there and kind of like hanging out and talking, but they're all there, you know, like ready. So then you know, okay, don't mess with this girl. Right? She simply absorbed her mind in the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's the point, is all this is going on, but the girl can just do what she wants to do. But if you don't have any of that, and it's just, you know, because one would think, oh no, but if nothing's happening, then it'll be easier to think. But actually it's not, because then the insecurity element is there. But this, then that secure element is there. Therefore, then they can do so many things. Right? It's just like, okay, you have the child, let's say you're in public, and he's with the parents. You know, they'll laugh, they'll joke, they'll run around, they'll do all those kind of things. But then if somehow or another they are separated from the parents, they can't see the parents, they do nothing. You understand? Because that lack of security is there. So that's the point. In that environment of security, then the girl can just be herself and act in a natural way. Does that make sense? So she'll act like that, and that means everyone else will be ignored. So she can move through the crowd and totally ignore everybody. Right? Does that make sense?
It's funny how modern women, they militate against the idea of protection, and at the same time they complain when they're harassed in public.
When they're harassed in public or no one pays any attention. Like that. I remember once I was walking, it was where was it? I think it was in Sydney. We came out of a building onto one of these, you know, it's a big street, so it had very wide sidewalk. You know, not a small sidewalk, but, you know, like the, in, you know, the inner city kind of big sidewalks where you have the big stores and that. And it came out on the sidewalk and then started walking down the road. And like, I don't know, like maybe, yeah, maybe more, 100, 150 feet away, there was this one lady. And, you know, she had dressed very nicely and she was walking and making sure everyone knew she was dressed nicely. And everybody was noticing. You know, as she walked by, they would all notice. And like that, and she was just, you know, going as if she's seeing nothing, but at the same time seeing everything. Right? And so from that distance, I saw her, and she saw me, and I just looked away. And then the interesting thing is that all the people that she's going, she's interacting, but when she got up to the point where I was, she wouldn't look. Because of that, in the beginning, you know, I didn't look how others were looking. So she got annoyed. So even though she's ignoring everyone, she's expecting them to look. But and that, does that make some sense? Yeah. So in this way, when the whole thing is there, then that's the environment. So that's the martyr girls, they'll feel they're protected when it's they can control the environment. So that's the thing, is that if they do that, it brings the attention to themselves. Well, here, the attention is already there, but it's in a proper formal way, so then they can just relax and they don't have to try to get the attention of anybody else, so they can just be themselves. So she's with the mothers, with her maidservants, with her friends, so they can just chat as if they're in their own house. Like that. And all the while, mridangas, conch shells, panavas, horns, and other instruments resounded. Footnote 25. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments. From the city up to the temple complex of Durga, she was protected in a palanquin. She then went 4 or 5 prakoshas, 15 feet outside the palanquin into the temple, while the guards stood outside in all directions, Mridanga and conch shells began to sound. Like that. So she went in the palanquins, you know, and like that. And then from there she got down, and then all the guards, you know, are around, and then she can move. Behind the bride followed thousands of prominent courtesans bearing various offerings and presents, along with well-adorned brahmanas, wives, singing and reciting prayers, and bearing gifts of garlands, scents, clothing, and jewelry. Right, so we see is that the brahmins are associated with the king. So the brahmins' wives, then they're associated with the women of the palace. So, yeah. Because various rituals, various things have to be done, pujas, and so then they'll know all those things. So it's not that they don't take care, they just take care of it within their world. Right? Who wants to be involved in the men's world? So they deal in that, in their world, and take care of everything. They were also professional singers, musicians, bards, chroniclers, and heralds. So it's just people there just writing down everything that happens. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that the next six verses, 44 to 49, describe Rukmini's worship of Goddess Durga. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, upon reaching the goddess's temple, Rukmini first washed her lotus feet and hands and then sipped water for purification. Right, so then they have, that's the part, you wash your hands and feet before you go into the temple. That's a standard practice. Thus sanctified and peaceful, she came into the presence of Mother Ambika. Right, because if you're purified, then the mind can be peaceful, because the mind being born from the mode of goodness, then, or generated from the mode of goodness, unless there's a clean environment, it actually can't be peaceful. So when you keep a clean house, yours clean, one's in clean environments, clean association, the mind's peaceful. But if it's not, then the mind becomes disturbed. The older wives of brahmanas, expert in the knowledge of rituals, led young Rukmini in offering respects to Bhavani, who appeared with her consort, Lord Bhava. Right, so even though she may know what's going on, it's still you follow authority. I mean, because otherwise, where do the kings get their authority? It's because they can follow authority. You can't be authority if you don't follow authority. It's just how it works. Most have make the mistake that, no, if they're in the position, if they're in charge, that makes them an authority. Not really, because the point is yes, you may mechanically have the thing, but you don't have the respect in that of others. So we see is that how Rukmini deals and all that, she has the respect of the whole public. Right? So that's the point, because she respects her seniors. So even though she may know what to do, still these senior Brahmin ladies, they'll say, okay, here you offer your obeisances, here you do this, here you offer flowers, you do all the different things. So they'll take them through the ritual. Yes, the BBT purport mentions, according to the Acharyas, the term Bhavan Vitam indicates that in the Ambika temple visited by Rukmini, the presiding deity was the goddess, whose husband appeared in an accompanying role. Thus, the ritual was properly performed by women. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti comments that the term Vidhi Gyana, Gyaha, may be understood to mean that since the learned wives of Brahmas knew of Rukmini's desire to marry Krishna, the verb Vandayam, Chakruhu, thus indicates that they prompted her to pray for what she really wanted. Right? So in other words, they know what rituals to be done. It's not necessarily they're the pujaris. Right? But they know where you go, where you stand, what you pray for, what mantras to use, you know, all these different things. Does that make sense? So they can guide you through. And then the pujaris do their part. Just like when Radharani goes to the temple of the sun god, then the Brahmin is there to take care. If they do the worship themselves, what's the point of Krishna being there? Does that make sense? If they turn on their boom box and then start just jumping up and down and dancing on the bed, then what do they need Krishna for? Right? You know, so. Yeah? Yeah. So, therefore, that's why these things are arranged that way, because then Krishna is part of the scene. Princess Rukmini prayed, O Mother Ambika, wife of Lord Shiva, I repeatedly offer my obeisances unto you. Because she wouldn't want to just be there on her own. She's there with her husband. But they've come there to see her, but that doesn't mean that she's not with her husband. Right? O Mother Ambika, wife of Lord Shiva, I repeatedly offer my obeisances unto you, together with your children. May Lord Krishna become my husband. Please grant this. Right? So this is being prompted by the Brahmin women, then she offers her prayers. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Goddess Durga has four famous children, two daughters, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and two sons, Lord Ganesh and Lord Kartikeya. They are all considered demigods and goddesses. Since Goddess Durga is always worshipped with her famous children, Rukmini specifically offered her respectful obeisances to the deity in that way. However, her prayers were special. Right, so she's offering respects to her and, you know, along with her husband, along with her children. That just because as a person, then that's how she exists, right? That's her lifestyle. But then she specifically then prays for, to get Krishna. Right?
This Lakshmi is Dhamma Lakshmi?
That I can't say, because it's generally is that Lakshmi and Dhana Lakshmi are seen as one person, but at the same time is the post of Dhana Lakshmi is held by a jiva. Because it's the potency of Lakshmi that allows Dhana Lakshmi to do her work. So the difference being is that if they're approaching in connection with Vishnu, then she takes the form of Lakshmi. But if they're approaching in the form just to get money and they're not connected to Krishna, then she takes that form of Dhana Lakshmi. Yes? No?
No, just in this connection, because Durga is anyway a demigoddess. Not her children. That's...
Because in these things, many times it's a bit subtle on these things. Like, I'm not sure. I think Ganesh, she just. I'm not sure what she took, but she just kind of made it.
Yeah, she made up of clay.
Yeah, took some clay and made, because Shiva would walk in when she was taking a bath, and she didn't like that, you know, because he would come into the house, you know, and then she'd be taking a bath, so she made him to be guard. And when he stopped Shiva from coming in, because he didn't know who Shiva was, then I think Shiva knocked his head off.
And therefore, he said that somehow you should get him back to life. So then he said that whichever is the first animal I get, so elephant is the first animal that he encounters. And therefore he gets an elephant and he puts that head on this wall.
No? So when Shiva came, then he knocked his head off. And then so his wife wasn't very happy with that, because she made him, so technically then, you know, he's the guard. But also that means then he's her son. So then because of that, then he said, okay, he'll put his head back on. But, you know, that head was destroyed. So therefore then he said, whatever animal I first see in the morning, then that's, we'll make the adjustment. So he saw an elephant, so Ganesh ended up with an elephant head. But, you know, so that one seems to be cool, because the head of the front of the elephant is auspicious, but it's never said that the front of a goat is auspicious. Neither the sides, top, bottom, back, no, it's just their goatee, yeah. That's only in Czech Republic. And that's it's very auspicious there. Yes. Yes, so that's how one of the children, Kartikeya. I'm not sure how he.
He was born from Parvati Devi, because one demon was supposed to be killed, and he had a boon. He would be killed only by the son of Lord Shiva.
Oh, okay.
Then he becomes
Okay, so that was the... Okay.
Yeah.
So that was her son, and then Saraswati and Lakshmi. I'm not sure how that worked.
Generally, Lakshmi Devi, they consider born from Earth, and then Earth is referred to as Durga. That's the way I heard.
Okay, yeah, because then she's... Lakshmi is born from the Earth, but then the point is that she's taken care of by Durga, so here's her mother. And Saraswati? No idea. No Bengalis? Okay. Because they know all the Durga stories. Right?
Maharaj, Saraswati consort of Lord Brahma?
Yes. Because the other is consort of. Means you have the original as consort of Divya Saraswati. That's consort of Lord Vishnu. So that's where the name Vagisha comes from. It's like that. That's the thing is that they're that personality, but all these different aspects are there because that's just two. I think there's I can't remember how many forms there are. Eight forms of Lakshmi. You know, so you have all these aspects. So they're a little subtle.
Okay. Lakshmi also came out from the churning of the milk ocean.
Yeah. So that's the point, is that you have you know, Shri, Bhu, and Nila. You have these three aspects of Lakshmi. So, Bhu's from the earth, then like that.
Sita Devi generally is considered as God of the earth.
Of the earth, yeah. So you have those.
What did
you
say?
He said Sita. Sita Devi is considered, you know, she's her mother's the earth. So that aspect. When you get into the Shaktis, then it gets, you know, very fine and all. Yeah. Ordinary people pray to Goddess Durga for material wealth, fame, profit, strength, and so on. Rukmini, however, desired to have Krishna for her husband, and therefore prayed that the deity be pleased with her and bless her with that benediction. Since she desired only Krishna, her worship of the demigods is not condemned. Right? But if you're worshiping for something else, then that's considered less intelligent. Because they have to get the permission of Krishna anyway to give it to you. So why not go to Krishna? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur adds,
before that, this point, devotees sometimes they get astray, saying that ladies, they can worship Lakshmi, Durga, Saraswati, taking it from locals, I guess, in order to increase their energy level, feminine energy, but saying that they do it in order to be able to do devotional service better.
And how, by having more energy, that makes devotional service go better?
The family goes well, no destructions, and then...
No, but I still don't get how the energy level... Just because that was mentioned first.
Because that's what I heard.
Yes, but the point is they're not putting it together. But when you increase the girl's energy level, what does that mean? It means when you're in the temple for Darshanartik in the morning, you increase the energy level, everyone notices her. So my question is, how does that make devotional service go better?
That's my question also.
That's the whole point, is that they're mistaking the you know, feminine qualities, that they are inherently Krishna conscious, or that they're going to use them in Krishna service. But if you don't know what you're dealing with, how do you do that? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if one has more power like that, then how will it be service that if everyone's looking at you? So then, because it's about you, not about Krishna. Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. So it's not that it's enhancing, that it's a nice mood. Like sometimes, I haven't seen here, but like in Vrindavan, sometimes you see like the village ladies from Gujarat would come. And they'd do a circle dance in front of the deities. But it just adds to the environment of the temple of taking darshan of the deity. Because for them, it's all about the deity. You know, like that, or how you say? At Gopinath Temple in Jaipur, every bent, there's all those old ladies there, you know, like that. And, you know, they jokingly call them, you know, Gopinath's gopis, you know, so stuff. They're all there, and they just render service, they chant, anything to be done, they clean, they're just there all day. But they add to the mood of the temple, you understand? But then when you have the, you know, we've had in the past our whirling darveshes or darveshis. You know, they can spin from all the way in the front of Radha Madhava back to Prabhupada and back, and not an eye in the temple is looking at the deity. So that's the high energy that doesn't have anything to do with devotional. So they'll say, well, just dancing, and, you know, why do they have to look? But the point is people look only because girls put out that energy. If a girl doesn't put out the energy, nobody looks. You know what I'm saying? It means if girls are walking down the street, no one's looking. Who are they looking at? The girl who puts out the energy, they look at them. So it's not the dancing that's the problem. It's the energies.
Attitude.
Yeah, so the attitude. So. Does that make sense? So the point is, if you're going to increase the energies, where are they learning how to deal with these energies? So if you're not dealing that, what's the point of increasing that? It means you have a fire and you increase the fire. What's the point unless you can control it and use it? Right? You know, if the fire becomes bigger, so therefore now you can bake a sack of potatoes rather than just a handful of potatoes. Okay, now that has some benefit. But if it just gets too hot, no one can sit there, everyone has to move, you have to worry about starting a fire and everything like that, then does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is who's teaching to control those energies? Yeah, so then what's the point? So you say they'll increase to, you know, service to Krishna, but then how is that? That's like two different things. Yeah, it's like, but they're not as expert as Sukadeva Goswami that can combine all these different seven aspects into one thing. So there's no need. Prabhupada mentions worship demigods to get a proper husband who's, you know, Krishna conscious and like that. That can be done, but you can also pray to Krishna, but that's the tradition. In other words, the girls are thinking about that and what is a proper husband and all these kind of aspects, rather than just, oh, man, that's cute. You know, like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know, who's the new boy on the block, you know? Not that kind of jazz.
Right. Different example, but similar point. A devotee asked Srila Prabhupada if he could worship Ganesh for making money for Krishna consciousness.
Right.
Prabhupada said yes, as long as you send me $100,000 a month.
Yes. Yes. Then it has some meaning to, you know, then you're using in Krishna's service. Okay. Yeah.
Maharaj, about worshipping Ganesh, they say that we are not worshipping any demigod in the temple, but today is that, you know, this puja, that Shivaratri and all, so we have some like Shiva this thing, or Durga this thing, or Ganpati this thing. It's a gimmick to attract the karmis to the temple.
It's not our business to be involved in all that.
And the argument that they give is that
people come to the temple, but millions of people come to the temple like that. So is it just volume is the important thing? Because when they come to the temple, do they actually take darshan of the deity, offer their obeisances, offer prayers, you know, like that, take charanamrita, take prasad? You know, as far as I know, in one of the temples, when they set up their Durga Puja, they put the deity in front of Radha. You know, I'm not sure their name, but they're the same group of deities as Radha Madhava. There were three deities. So here, Boston, and Berkeley, they all have the same. So they just set it up in front of the deities. So they don't care for the deities. So is it just volume? That's all that they came and they were in the temple. You know that if you're not worshiping Krishna, is it the temple? You know what I'm saying? Because it's not about the location. It's about what goes on there. Does that make sense? So it becomes a temple because we're worshiping Krishna. If the devotees pack up and move out, it's just another building. But because they're worshiping Krishna there, then it becomes a place of pilgrimage. Then it's the same as Vrindavan. But if they're not, then what? So it's you can do all these things. It means you could have pole dancing. How many people would come for that? You know, or barn dancing, right? You know, we're going to have, you know, barn dancing. You know, put hay on the floor and get out the guys with the fiddles and everything like that. And, you know, like that. You could just, find out whatever people are into. You know, you could have a, what do they call them? Raves, you know, like that, you know. Put one of those balls up there with the mirrors on it and like that, and close all the doors and remove all the water, and you'll make plenty of money because you have one stand for water and all that. You know, just have good insurance because if one of the kids dies, then they're going to go after you. So, you know, it's a problem. You know what I'm saying? You could sell drugs. I mean, how many people would come to the temple?
How much money?
Yeah, how much money you'd make.
Offer drugs.
Huh? Yeah, Jayatirtha tried that. It didn't work out so good. Yeah, it really didn't work out for him. Right? Yeah. You understand? So the whole point is that's why we go by what's recommended by the acharyas. Because otherwise we can say all these things work, but do they? That's the whole point. In reality, do they work? You can say, okay, we have volume of people coming, but what's the quality of what did they take away with them? You know, so why do we need to get involved like that? You know, so that's the whole thing, is it important? We have what we do, and we do that, and who comes? So if the point is, are we selling glass or are we selling diamonds? So the point is, glass, lots of people come. Diamonds, fewer people come. And then, so if we're worried that only a few people come, but at least then the quality of them. Because one good person, then he knows his, and he can influence his friends. But these people come, they won't become devotees, and they'll not make anybody else devotees. So actually, what have you done? Other than some Agyata Sukriti. But why be involved just in Agyata Sukriti when you could be doing direct activities? Right? In other words, they're doing Agyata Sukriti, but are we doing bhakti? Right, we run Ratha Yatra, we're involved in bhakti, that's why it's Agyata Sukriti. But what service are we doing that makes it Agyata Sukriti? Because they'll come and worship Durga and all these guys like that and be totally mundane. You know what I'm saying? So unless the devotees are doing a daily worship of these deities as devotees of the other deities by offering prasad and all that and cleaning and that, are they doing that? No, because they don't want to increase the deity worship. So why would they want? Why would they try to sell an area that they're not interested in and somehow or another say that they're doing the Krishna conscious thing? In other words, doing the actual worship, that's not interesting. Oh, that's ritualistic, that's this and that. But somehow or another, this, worship of demigods, now that's preaching. How does that work? You know what I'm saying? You know, if you don't know how to cook, don't make the menu. You know, it's like it's not your business. Does that make sense? So you're worshiping the deities, you're worshiping, you know, Lord Shiva, nicely as that, then they can come there, then they get the benefit of worshiping Shiva, who's being worshipped in this mood of the Vaishnava, then they'll get the devotional, but they're just worshiping according to the demigods thing, so they have no idea that it has any connection with Krishna. So in what way have we assisted or helped? Other than they'll give money, then why do that to the temple? We can just have a hall or something. But why we should be involved? You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? Because they can say, oh, the money's going somewhere else. But so much money's going somewhere else. You know, what about the meat industry? They're getting a lot of money. So should we open a burger stall or something so we can get that money for Krishna? You know, it's just... Is it just about volume and money? Is that it? Because if that is what was introduced by the Ionians. You know, that it's relative, that this is a value, this is the point, and so it's by numbers, it's vox populi. Not about quality, not about standards. So again, it's just another trick to not accept the scriptures, not accept the acharyas. So we only accept the scriptures. Oh, you can do this, but what about doing this for the deity? Oh, don't be fanatic. You know, I mean, how does that work? You can't do that. You know, that's like going out in those skimpily clad outfits, and then when somebody looks and they go, my eyes are up here. You know, it's like, kind of like, you know, what is this? It's cheating. You know. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur adds, they had her chant the mantra mentioned in this verse. May Ganesh remove all the obstacles I have now before me. May Krishna be my husband. May you approve it. So be it. May he be your husband, answered Durga. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Rukmini worshiped the goddess with water, scents, whole grains, incense, clothing, garlands, necklaces, jewelry, and other prescribed offerings and gifts, and also with arrays of lamps. The married Brahmana women each performed worship simultaneously with the same items. Also offering savories and cakes, prepared betel nut, sacred threads, fruit, and sugarcane juice. The ladies gave the bride the remnants of the offerings and then blessed her. She in turn bowed down to them and the deity and accepted the remnants as prasadam. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, the women gave her the remnants with joy and respect. She bowed to them and to Durga. It is forbidden to accept the remnants from the devatas, but there is no fault for an unmarried girl to do so. Baduhu. Right, because then this is in connection with, you know, getting married. But once she's married, then she doesn't, right? Because then it's just. Yeah. But it's all done with respect. That's the whole point. Is that, yeah, everybody's worshiping, everybody's doing nicely. Then that proper respect, the proper culture. The princess then gave up her vow of silence and left the Ambika temple, holding on to a maidservant with her hand, which was adorned with a jeweled ring. Rukmini appeared as enchanting as the Lord's illusory potency, who enchants even the sober and grave. Thus the kings gazed upon her virgin beauty, her shapely waist and her lovely face adorned with earrings. Her hips were graced with a jewel-studded belt. Her breasts were just budding, and her eyes seemed apprehensive of her encroaching locks of hair. She smiled sweetly. Her jasmine bud teeth reflected the glow of her bimba red lips. So that means they're nice and shiny. Otherwise, how will they reflect? As she walked with the motions of a royal swan. Because I think swans, when they walk, they move the whole body on that one side. You know, elephant means that you move, you know, you sway. Because it mentions that, you know, girls are walking that way, or like the swan, so they, does that make sense? So it's just different ways of walking. I have heard from authorities, though I only heard this recently, that someone was talking to, discussing something on the tour, and they mentioned about the 11 ways that girls walk. And the girls knew what they were talking about. And the men had never heard of it. Like that. You all know what I'm talking about? What that these 11 ways are?
No.
Huh? No?
Not the girls on the
tour. Okay. <Good job. laughs> Okay. And so there's this various ways that it mentions and all that. So it's just it's different kinds of movements, the various feminine movements. You know, like it mentions, like the Arjuna, he will walk like a lion, or Krishna walks like a lion. So there's a certain thing there with the shoulders and all that. So, as she walked with the motions of a royal swan, The effulgence of her tinkling ankle bells beautified her feet. Seeing her, the assembled heroes were totally bewildered, right, because it mentioned that she was like enchanting as the Lord's illusory potency. So to those who have material desire, then she'll have that aspect. But for those who are transcendental, then they'll just see the consort of the Lord. So in that way, she'll attract the mind of the Lord because of the devotional attitude. And others will see that attraction, you know, and see they'll increase their attraction to the Lord. But those who are not, then they'll be attracted to her. Does that make sense? Because in other words, these are all very nice features to worship the Lord with. Does that make sense? Because then it pleases the Lord how nicely the... Okay. Lust tore at their hearts. Right, not poked, not knocked on the door, not, you know, yeah. Indeed, when the king saw her broad smile and shy glance, they became stupefied, dropped their weapons, and fell unconscious to the ground from their elephants, chariots, and horses. Right, so that's why only these things are arranged with only Kshatriya girls, because if a king falls off an elephant, he's all right. But, you know, but if a Brahmin falls off an elephant, you know, there may be damage. So that's why then, you know, it's arranged in a slightly different way, right? Okay. On the pretext of the procession, Rukmini displayed her beauty for Krishna alone. So that's the whole point, is she's displaying her beauty for Krishna. Others then, because they want to take advantage of that, then they'll become lusty. So her beauty actually is the transcendental beauty. But so they're seeing that without Krishna, so that therefore then lust and the illusory energy is there. Yes?
There's a doubt.
A doubt?
At this point. Because she was displaying her beauty to Krishna.
Yes.
But they were attracted. So when we spoke about the girls spinning in the temple, they might say the same thing.
They might.
I mean, this is the doubt. Presenting their part.
Well, you can approach it from the, you start from the element is her mother Durga.
Oh, that's not fair.
Because we're supposed to follow in the footsteps of these persons.
Yeah, I want to know from the philosophical point how to reply to that.
Well, the first of all is, where are the guards with weaponries that are taking care? Where's her maidservants? Where's all those things like this? But she's just there alone doing her own thing. It's hard to deal with that because it's just like...
because to explain, you need some basis.
Yes, but the point is... if it's a disturbance, then go somewhere else and dance. Go in the back. You know, so it's like that space next to Prabhupada, you know, between the walkway and that back gate. You could do all your dancing there. You could see the deities really nice from there. But the problem is no one sees you. I don't know, have you ever seen this one devotee? I think he's from Canada. When he comes, very occasionally you see him, every so many years. He comes, he just jumps up and down and spins.
Elderly?
Yes. You know, I mean, when we first saw him, he wasn't so elderly back in the 70s. But now, but since then, that's how he's danced. And it's not that he's trying to be safe. He'll be out of the way. He'll be anywhere. It doesn't matter. He'll dance. It's not that he goes to the front and then does his thing. And so he's always doing that. But the point is with these things, it has to be in that way. They can't adjust. If others are noticing, then they don't make adjustment. She's doing this for Krishna, because now Krishna is going to come and take her away in the chariot. So if, while doing that, others may be there, then Krishna will come down, swoop down, take her away, so that all these others that are looking at her are not going to be able to get any advantage from that, then yes, why not? Because the point is then, does she want to say she's in this position of Rukmini? Because then the point is that if she is that kind of advanced, if she saw that others, it didn't seem to work so well, why would she continue it based on, well, Rukmini, but Rukmini here, there's the shyness also, and that's the one quality that absolutely no one ever mistaked that that girl had. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty is that it's not a problem that the dancing's going on, but it should match the whole mood. You know, the girls are all dancing, it's all together, but she will be dancing and then, you know, bumping into people, whacking people when she spins her arms, stuff like that. And so is that really about Krishna? You know, you can say, oh, but they're just lost in ecstasy, but you can say anything. You know, that's the whole point, is that one has to be careful. Because then you just go to another place and dance over there. If dancing is important, you're dancing for the deity, go back in another place and dance there. You know? Because about deity, where's the problem of distance? Especially with Radha Madhava. I find the dark ones. You know, you have the temple room and then you have the back pillars just before Prabhupada?
Yes.
That's the point from where the darshan gets good. Because you can see the moods, everything like that. So being over there, that's a nice place. When that side was the men's side, that was the side to be. And then when it switched, then it's the other side.
In this example, Rukmini Devi is the center of attention for the whole scene.
Because it is her wedding.
It's her wedding. So that's not really applicable to the example.
Yeah, that's good. Is that they like that one? That's the point. It's not. It means if it's her wedding, and that, then great. If it's happening in the temple, then why not?
Maybe that's the reason South Indian temple dancing hall is way back.
Yeah. Because then you see the mood of the deity. Like that. Because being up close, then prayers and, you know, specifics and that. But if it's just the mood, then like that. Because when you're dancing, you're not necessarily able to pay that much detailed attention. Okay. Slowly she advanced, the two moving lotus whirls of her feet, awaiting the arrival of the Supreme Lord. Right, so she's going and slowly being there and that, and by them getting bewildered, then they're not going to notice that Krishna comes, so she's just waiting for Krishna. With the fingernails of her left hand, she pushed some strands of hair away from her face and shyly looked from the corners of her eyes at the king standing before her. At that moment, she saw Krishna. Then, while his enemies looked on, the Lord seized the princess, who was eager to mount his chariot. The BBT purport mentions, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, Rukmini was anxious that her locks of hair might impede her vision, since she was most eager to see her beloved Krishna. The non-devotees or demons are bewildered at seeing the opulences of the Lord and think that his potency is meant for their gross sense gratification. But Rukmini, an expansion of Krishna's internal potency, was meant for the Lord alone. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions, right? So the hair is there, so she's thinking it may block her seeing of Krishna. So then moving the hair was so she could see Krishna, not she's moving the hair so people can see her. Right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions, a woman is called Shama when her breasts are very firm and when someone in her presence feels warm in the winter and cool in the summer. Right, so then that must be that she has that quality. Like that. It means the skin will be, in the summertime when it's hot, if you touch them, they'll feel cool. And in the winter when you touch them, they'll feel warm. You ever seen that? No? Actually, I've seen a few devotees that have maybe not now. You know, the ones that have the marks on their necks like a conch shell, and they have that very nice, you know, fine skin and stuff like that. I think that when the skin is kapha, I think you get that.
Kids?
Huh?
The small kids, the babies.
Oh, they have like that. Okay. Like that. But I've seen a couple of Indian boys. They say like that. You know, I think they're like maybe from Calcutta or some other, they're really like high class, and they have like that. So it's a general thing. So then the girls, then they would have that also. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further points out that since the beautiful form of Rukmini is a manifestation of the Lord's internal energy, the non-devotees cannot perceive her. Thus, the heroic kings assembled in Vidarbha were agitated with lust upon seeing the Lord's illusory potency, an expansion of Rukmini, right? They couldn't actually see the internal potency. Like Ravana, he couldn't see the internal potency, he saw the external potency. So he took Maya Sita, not the internal potency. So in the same way here, that's why they're getting agitated. And okay, that's another aspect. Then you'd have to say is that you're the internal potency, that you can manifest the external for all the non-believers, all the Prashandis, and then for the Lord, then it's just the internal potency. Yeah, so they kind of have to stretch it a bit. So. In other words, no one can lust after the Lord's eternal consort. Since as soon as one's mind is contaminated with lust, the covering of Maya separates one from the pristine beauty of the spiritual world and its inhabitants. Right? So if that material lust is there, you're not actually dealing with the Lord and his associates. You're dealing with the external potency. But if you're dealing there with the proper attitude, proper affection, then you're dealing with the internal potency. Okay. Finally, Srimati Rukmini Devi felt shy as she looked from the corners of her eyes at the other kings, for she did not want to meet the glances of those inferior men. So she's shy and just, you know, so that she doesn't actually make eye contact. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. At the proper time, Rukmini displayed her powers in order to defeat the opposing kings. As described in verse 54, she did not offer her beauty to anyone except Krishna. Therefore, she possessed the Maya of Krishna, Deva Mayim. This was the Maya of Krishna who shines, Deva, with his variegated sarup for the devotees, but appears like a thunderbolt to the wrestlers in the arena. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43-17. Another version has Vira Mohinim. She was bewildering to the opposing kings, breaking their determination. Right, because they're there, and yes, all this is going to happen, then they become so bewildered they're falling off their horses, right? So where's the fighting spirit, right? You know. Seeing her as she bewildered them by assuming another form, they fainted. That form which bewildered them is described as having fine hips, etc. By her taking that form of Mohini, they were bewildered. Though famous for courage and intelligence, Yashasvinaha, they became tormented with love because of her bewildering form. The kings became useless. Seeing that bewildering form, they fell to the ground. She had offered her real, extraordinary beauty to the Lord, right? Because the material beauty is not actually what's attractive to the Lord, because it's all his energies anyway, so that's not the attractive. So it's the devotional aspect, that's what's attractive. And so that aspect is the transcendental beauty. That's the aspect that's there. The form, that's through the medium through which it's expressed, but it's about that devotional mood. But with the materialist, it's about the form, not about the devotional mood. That's not interesting. It was not visible to the demons. With her finger, she pushed aside her locks of hair. She was looking for her Lord with shy side glances. She did not look directly. She saw the fallen kings and then saw Krishna. What did she do? She moved her lotus bud feet slowly with a desire to come close to him. Instead of Charanabja Koshao, there is another version, Chalat Padma Koshao, accepted by Sridhar Swami. Charna is missing in that metaphor. This is an example of the first type, Ati Shayoki, identity indifference. Right. So then there's a difference in their position, but they're identifying. So then, yeah. Okay, so how long does this go? This keeps going on. Okay, we'll have to stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanand ki. Yeah, no, not for everyone else. Yeah, but she was specifically pointing that out. So that's another aspect of it, is that Rukmini was specifically putting out that illusory energy to bewilder everyone. So then is that dancer is specifically putting out to bewilder everyone? But why
I don't want to be their advocate.
Sorry? Yes, no, but I just say.
Which takes it back to your original point, that only if they put out the energy are people going to look.
Yeah. Because if you bring it to neutral, you can walk through the crowd and no one will see you. Like that. So if you either put it out or draw it in, either way, you'll be noticed. Like that. But if you keep it at neutral, then no one notices. You just look plain. But generally, girls don't like to look plain, so therefore they won't do that.
That neutrality, is that just a lack of concern for what people are thinking? Or
No. That means the neutrality itself.
Yes.
The neutrality means you're controlling the energies just so that you're in a neutral position so you can move and be unnoticed. Like that. Because you're not putting out energy either way. You know, and then when you get before the deities, offer that, then, you know, then you interact and all that. And then when you move again, then you pull it back in. And then move again. So it can be done. It's just you have to know how the energies work. Like that. Most girls don't know. Like that. It goes on and off, they don't even know. Or generally, the first world, the more, how you say, in tune girls, they know how to put it out. Or to draw it in, but they don't know how to keep it neutral and do anything else. And so, it struck me once because I'd been in, I think, in New York, went to Bloomingdale's, and I went into the shop to get something, and then I was also later in a shop in Poland, and the same thing happened. The girl behind the counter, you know how they put out the energy, the sales girl, and all that, and then she dropped something. So the Bloomingdale's girl just said, oh, dropped it. Oh, you know, like this. And then, you know, got it and then got it back and that. So she didn't drop the energy at any point. She just used it as part of the display. But I remember the Polish girl, she's there and this and that. And she dropped it. And it's just like everything turned off. And like, what happened? Like that. And then like this, got it and all this. And when she got, you know, herself together again, then she turned back on the energy. But she just didn't know. So it's just, it's a matter of, you know. But you see, like when you're going, in the cultured families and all that, the girls are moving through public things. Like they just turn off the energies. You just don't see them. And if you try to interact, then it gets, you know, they turn on the they don't pull in the energy. They put out negative energy. They just kind of just, you know, it's just firm there. It's just there. They don't, you know, it's just there. So you just okay, you know.
Is this learned as part of the 64 arts?
No, it's learned as part of just being a girl. Like that. But someone has to make you aware of it. Someone has to teach it. So you're taught, then the girl knows it's there, then she'll work it out herself. That's why girls are more clever. But they'll figure it out, but unless they know it's there, then they don't deal. Just, like I was saying, that Polish girl, she didn't know. While the New York girl, she knew, but she only knew how to put it out. She didn't know how to use it, you know. She didn't know how to the neutral or anything else. What? You know what I'm saying?
If you few years back when we used to visit temples in India, generally thousands of people are there. Everybody is together, but there is never a scene of any of seeing or anything.
You don't know. As one prominent Indian sadhu pointed out, is that the Vedic religious process is how you can have thousands of people together doing one thing, but each person is an individual at the same time and interacting with the deity in their own particular mood. Though the rituals, everything else is established. So that's the thing. You can have them all in, like that. And so you see, it's just like Srinachi. There's so many people, you don't even have to, you don't have to walk. You just get literally carried in with the waves. Yeah, like that. I think in South India they say, not enough space to throw mustard seeds or something like that. Sesame seed. The sesame seed can't even get in between to fall to the ground. If you threw it the sesame seeds, they wouldn't hit the ground. There's so many people. So, like that. But you don't notice. Everybody's seeing the deity. Everybody's there. Because it's just, it's about the deity, and there's that culture. It's just that there's the temple is small and there's a lot more people. Like that. So it's very different. So it's just, it's about Krishna. So that being centered, then it all works. And then when they're out of the temple, then they stand a little farther apart. They don't use that. You have, what is it? European spacing, Asian spacing, and then temple spacing. Right? They don't use that outside the temple. So it's not a problem. But it's just, one has to be aware of this. One has to know. Then you can do something with it. But if you don't know, because there's so many fine points of culture that are there that are just not known. And because they're not known, then it sounds strange, all this. But the point is, if you understand the emotional things that are going on, the culture that's going on and all that, then it's so much more full than what goes on otherwise. So, just all those, anything he mentioned, it has a significance. She walks out, she holds the hand of her maidservant, the ring, she can see it as a ring because, they're holding it away, you can see the ring is there, so how they're holding, how they're dealing. So it's not about holding on because she'll fall over or this or that. It's just that natural support, that interaction, that closeness. So it's all these subtle points are there. And so then we see is that her physical beauty is there, because that was the illusory side that everyone else saw. Because that's what they saw. But for the transcendentalists, they see the devotion she has towards Krishna and all that. And they happen to have this form. But for the kings, it was about the form. But for Krishna, it's about the devotion. Yeah?
Maharaj, and traditionally women never dance in front of men in the temples also. It's only women who dance amongst the women, that's the group.
Or they're all together in that. So if they do, they're in a group, like that. But yeah, so it won't be there. So this one where just one girl's dancing and that and like that, it just doesn't happen. But you can say so many things. That's the whole point. Especially with a Chintabeda Veda Tattva, it's like you can get away with anything. So.
Mm-hmm.